Hello and welcome to the Noster Compass episode 19. We have another packed week of Noster delight with lots of work that devs have been doing. So let's get together and talk about all of this. We can start with Nostria, three releases since last week, version 3.1.26 through 28. And they've now added a background music player on Android. So this is good to see. Now, the app keeps alive while audio is playing in the background. This is, of course, maybe useful if you're watching a video and just want to quickly switch app, but even more useful for podcasts or music that is also supported by Nostria. So update that and check out the latest media features here.
Yeah, thank you, Max. Yeah, I mean, Nostria used to be just a progressive web app where you get all those things for free, actually. You can just integrate with the on-screen, lock screen and everything. But then when I started doing the packaged native apps, those features disappeared. There's also other features that have disappeared, which I will be continuously improving. But I really love this like lock screen features now. I use it all the time, listening to my own music when I'm on the run and whatever. So, I saw someone comment this on a post on Nostra as well, complaining a bit, and then I just had to jump around and get it finished, and now it's here.
How many music songs do you think are on Nostra now? Like, how many are playable?
I don't have to guess. I can just open it. It's 551 songs. But I know for sure that there are a bunch of the older ones that was published like more than a year ago that doesn't exist anymore. And it just shows how the importance, like Derek put something in the NIP where he suggested that you post your music on Blossom Relays. And I think that's super important for longevity of those media files, because people post them on, I see some people post them on WordPress servers and other centralized places. And when those go down, that we lose that music. So maybe there should be some sort of like repost functionality, but it's a double-edged sword, I think, like because musicians want to control their own distribution. So maybe it's not the best to kind of republish their content if they really want to remove it.
And our top story today is Amethyst yet again. I already told Vitor that he has to slow down with shipping because it's kind of unfair that he gets like six paragraphs in a Compass newsletter. But he said others should just ship more. And I guess I agree with that opinion too. So let's start with their continued integration of the Marmot protocol. That's the encrypted group chats. Here, they did more work on MIP1 and MIP5 wire formats. So encoding the TLS style length prefix and validating that against the existing MDK test vectors. It's always good to compare tests when you're re-implementing something. They've also added the MIP0 key package relay list support. So this is a list of relays where you advertise that here is where you publish your key packages, your MLS subkeys. And then there were a couple more correctness fixes. So there was some commit framing so that the encrypted welcomes are serialized on the same bytes as MDK produces, and some interoperability works, as well as an outer layer decryption bug, which caused state divergence between two admins of the same group. And then some more fixes or security improvements. There was a commit path and a message encryption gap, which was addressed. Now everything, all the signature validation and key rotation, et cetera, are now properly referenced against the test vectors of MDK. What are you guys' thoughts on getting Marmot into Amethyst?
I think it's awesome. Honestly, I mean, we need every single Nostra app to use Marmot at some point. So Amethyst is the best way to start, right? I do think, though, that the fact that he's vibe coding the implementation of MLS is... I don't know if that's the wisest decision, to be honest. I don't know what everyone else thinks, but for me, like, security stuff is the kind of stuff you can't really vibe code, but I don't know.
Well, we need, if you need it everywhere, then I have one question maybe here can be answered here. It's like, in Nostria now, at least, I'm running the Tauri, like for packaging the web app, and I can potentially then run like your Rust code, you know, in the Rust part of it. And I'm thinking, if I want to do support for this, it's probably best to use that library instead of running it in sort of the browser code in TypeScript. I would probably get better support, right? And that would be a viable way, I'm sure. Though that means it wouldn't work that well in the web browser. Or maybe it's possible to do the white noise RS release as a WebAssembly. Is that possible?
I mean, we can't currently compile to WebAssembly. I mean, we kind of can, but it's not really that great. But there is a TypeScript implementation that's going to work pretty well on the browser. That's Mammoth.ts. And perhaps that should be what you're using. I'm not sure.
If you're using a Tauri app, then I think you can probably just use MDK. On the Rust side, it runs like the white noise RS is the library we created to be the core of the white noise app. So it's more focused towards that, and it will have like a bunch of very opinionated decisions on how this thing is built. At the same time, it's going to be probably a little bit more difficult to make work in WASM because of, like, I don't know, particular decisions we're taking regarding storage and stuff like that. But I guess best way would be to try and see. We haven't actually tested that particular case.
I'm guessing if you want to have the same or similar code base between web and native apps, then using TypeScript for both might be the more straightforward path. If you do want WebAssembly bindings, or however those are called, we can probably figure that out too. So far, all of the web app devs have preferred the native TypeScript implementation. That's why we were prioritizing that over WebAssembly.
No, but if he's using Tauri, then he already has a Rust backend sort of in his code base. So in this case, I would say it's probably like more comfortable to keep most of the logic in the Rust side. Otherwise, it's going to be a bit messy.
Well, it's mostly up to performance, right? So would you say that if for any web developer on Nostr clients today, will it get good enough performance using the TypeScript library?
Yeah, the TypeScript library is basically feature complete. I mean, some things might be missing. MDK definitely gets the most love. That's what we're using for white noise. So that's the flagship library. But yeah, both will work.
Yes, I don't know specifically about performance, but my guess is it shouldn't really be a problem. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
And what's also very helpful, especially for development, is to have command line tools specifically, so the agents and scripts can do a bunch of testing. And Vitor shipped Amy, which is a Marmot command line tool that's based on his Kotlin stack and goes hand in hand with the white noise CLI, which is based on the MDK and white noise RS stack. So now we have two command line tools for Marmot, which is really cool.
Yeah, this is great. These command line tools are very helpful to both test and also compose them to build other stuff. So exciting to see more.
And Amethyst also continued work on their NIP72 communities. These are the moderator curated communities, which we'll later have a deep dive in. For a long time now, you could read and post messages into these groups from your Amethyst client. But now with this PR, the admin or moderator tasks are also now integrated. So you can start your own community by publishing the kind 34,550 definitions. and then approve posts by others as well. So now the full-fledged end-to-end stack for 72 communities is integrated in Amethyst. NoStrudel supports this as well. And again, we'll talk a bit more about the details of how the SNP72 community works. Also, he added support for the emoji set that's SNP30, which is an emoji pack management, NIP. And now there's a UI for this, so you can create and curate your own list of custom emojis and publish them so that others can use it as well.
That's, of course, the most important feature, right? Everyone needs that.
But still no GIF keyboard.
I know, right?
But, well, maybe if Vitor would start a Zap goal, then he would get enough sets to justify adding a GIF keyboard. And that's what he has added for the live streams. And so live streams is the NIP 53. And NIP 75 is the Zap goals, where you can set a custom amount of Zaps that you would, or amount of donation that you would like to reach. And this is now nicely integrated in the live stream UI. So you have a progress bar and an easy button for a one-tap zap, and also a leaderboard of the top zappers of that live stream. So yeah, this, you know, I think streaming is really relying a lot on microtransactions, where people are really willing and happy to pay money for the live content creators. And it's cool to see that we have this now properly integrated in Amethyst as well.
And not only that, like, streaming is something that that I think is going to be very easy to get people to use NoStrudel for, because all of the streaming platforms have their own problems and have a bunch of little things that don't work or that users don't like here and there. And to me, it sounds like a perfect opportunity to get NoStrudel adoption with the average people, I guess.
Oh, you mean because they are already used to things not working? Yeah, it'd be cool to see. Again, this kind of thing to me is like great that they exist out there, but I'm still, I guess, waiting to see if any of these features actually get enough attention or usage.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the way that I think about it is that, you know, basically every streamer complains about every streaming platform and they all suck, they all have problems. And, you know, it's not that hard to make live streaming work on NoStrudel. So hopefully we're going to see, you know, we're going to see a bunch of people join once those features are implemented well. At least that's my hope. I don't know.
Yeah. On other interesting news, Vitor started work on a media over quick transport client for live audio rooms. So these are live video and audio calls, not live streamed, but just regular calls. And it seems Vitor is still on the re-implementation spree, because he wrote an entire quick library in Kotlin, since that hasn't really existed before. So I think that makes Vitor officially a world record holder of most libraries vibed in a single month. Not bad, but good to see that Media over Quick gets some more love and hopefully will establish itself as the standard for audio and video calls over NoStrudel.
Yeah, this one is amazing, and I think it works or it pairs very well with the Marmot integration. So it's good to see this kind of development that is like a way to provide a feature that everyone is already used to, being able to have a voice or video chat and do it in a way that is still somewhat privacy preserving and secure. So this is awesome.
Yep, I love this one too. I just want to get rid of my SIM card, and maybe Amethyst allows me to finally do that. So anybody who wants to reach me can dial me on my NPUB.
Yes. And the final batch of features for Amethyst are that they've added a FollowPax discovery feed. So you were already able to Z and create FollowPax in the past, but now you can find a feed of which packs your friends have published. And so that should help you with onboarding and finding new interesting people to follow. They've also started work on a integrated notification service for real-time relay connections in the background. So a little bit similar to, I guess, what Pokey was used for in the past, where Pokey is a standalone app that manages your notifications and background connections and then dispatches it to Amethyst. That worked for probably a year now. But now this lands in Amethyst directly. And apparently the Marmot DMs are a part of this because Pokey doesn't have Marmot logic yet. And so to have good DM notifications, now the notification service is inside Amethyst directly.
So just to understand, this is implementing MIPO 5 plus some additional logic for notifications in Amethyst?
That's actually a good question. I guess those two things... Well, no, so MIPO 5 would be the Google Firebase notification service. And the way that I understand this from the pull request is that he keeps the WebSocket to the relays, specifically the user's inbox relays, open. So yeah, this is not MIP 5.
Okay.
I think it's how we're doing notifications now, right? On Android?
Yes.
Okay.
Just keeping the WebSockets open.
Yeah, because I was going to say that if they are trying to mix MIPO 5 with other notifications that the app may have, I think that's probably going to break some assumptions regarding, for example, the privacy of the notifications and the trust assumptions on the notification server. So it's something to be a little bit careful about.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also for MIP 5, Vitor would have to run his own notification server to wake up the Amethyst apps directly, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought this was. So, yeah, I was quickly corrected.
Yeah, but interesting thought on could the app be simultaneously using Noster WebSocket notifications as well as legacy Google notifications at the same time?
I think that's that's totally possible. It's funny that you call them legacy. Well, they're the ones that actually work. That would be possible. If my concern with the notifications, specifically the MIPO 5 Marmot notifications, is that the way the protocol is written or set up allows for the notification server to manage these notifications without being able to link identities with the device tokens. And because Apple and Google only allow you to have a single device token per application, if you're also using that device token to trigger other kind of notifications, so for example, mentions on Noster, like notes or whatever, then that immediately links your public key with the device token. And then that means that that notification server can also know when someone is talking to you. So that's something to keep in mind.
Next up, we have a big initial release of Tollgate version 0.1.0. So Tollgate has been around for quite some time, but now they start to finalize a full specification for their ecosystem. What Tollgate does is it allows you to sell your Wi-Fi, your neighbor's Wi-Fi for Bitcoin using Cashew tokens, which is really cool. So you have a password unprotected Wi-Fi, so no password in the Wi-Fi itself. But when you connect to it, you don't get internet, but it throws you a captive portal. And there it kindly asks you to toss some stats via Cashew eCash tokens, which of course you can copy and paste out of your wallet without having internet. And then once the robot has been fed with sats, he will give you internet. And they have a three-layer architecture. Tip one is a specification for the advertisement, session, and notice parts. And then tip two is the logic for cashew payments on top of these sessions. And then there is the HTTP spec 1 through 3, which defines a plain HTTP surface for devices on restrictive operating systems. And then finally, there is the Noster 1 spec, which defines the Noster relay transport for clients that can open WebSockets, since I do believe that the router is also running a relay on its machine. And finally, so I guess the fourth spec layer is the Wi-Fi 1 spec, which covers the captive portal routing for paying customers. So really cool to see that Tollgate is graduating to a nicely specced out standard so that you could integrate it into an app yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us on. We've been meaning to update our Tollgate implementation possibilities since a while. These are like, we had verbally like communicated these things and implemented the things you just described over the course of more than a year, and like the essentially currently since there's only one implementation, we're treating the spec more as documentation, but we do hope that in future this can be useful for interoperability when other people make their own Tollgate implementations as well. Yeah, like you mentioned, now we distinguish between TIPS, Tollgate implementation possibilities, and HTTP and Noster, and Wi-Fi, which is a transport. That's because many of the things we do in our implementation do need to be standardized for interoperability with other things that work similarly. But there are some things that are Tollgate specific, like, or let's say some things that are very generic, where if you're, let's say you want to charge an electric car or with bearer instruments, or you want to buy water with bearer instruments, like that has nothing to do with Wi-Fi and has nothing to do, not necessarily at least, with HTTP, et cetera, et cetera. So we try to like pull apart things that don't necessarily need to be connected. And I think this is what you described as layers, Max. So essentially all you need is TIPO 1 and TIPO 2 to make a Tollgate. And it could be for any stream of resources that is paid for with bearer instruments. We use Cashew because it's easy to work with because it allows us to do small, frequent, granular transactions. So earlier, AB H3PO mentioned that he would love to communicate, do a video call over a Noster with his MPUB, and not need a SIM card. Unfortunately, the ISP is still going to give you a identifier so that they can invoice you at the end of the month for your data consumption, and you have a credit line with that ISP. And that's what we're trying to change. We want you to be able to use any ISP's infrastructure because you're buying them with their instruments upfront. So you buy 1 megabyte from this ISP, and if you walk closer to another ISP's tower, you buy your next megabyte from that ISP if you like. So you don't have any vendor lock-in because you don't have any credit lines. But the same thing, Tollgate isn't specific to Wi-Fi, and it's also not specific to captive portals. That's just what we're using right now. That's where the HTTP part that Max mentioned comes in. When we're doing Tollgate on top of SIPs, for instance, hopefully we won't need captive portals anymore, and FIPS will replace the firewall rules, so to say. We're still figuring out what a world, like, I don't know how many of you have already heard of FIPS, but it's definitely worth looking into. It's an acronym for FUCK IPs, where you essentially use an MPUB instead of an IP address. And you would think that routing is very difficult if you don't have authorities like IANA to distribute addresses. But FIPS uses Bloom filters and what's it called, spanning trees, in order to navigate a large network efficiently. Whether it's efficient enough to scale to all the devices around the globe is yet to be seen. Yeah, that's the basic idea, and it could be incredibly useful as a foundation for Tollgate as well. So, yeah, TIP01 and TIP02 are the only parts that are like really scoped to Tollgate, and we treat this as documentation of what's already there, and hopefully one day other people will be making implementations as well, so that this becomes more relevant in terms of split. Yeah, that's it for me.
Okay, go.
Yeah, sorry. I was just saying this is really awesome, and if I catch that correctly, the vision is for this to be kind of like a mesh where you load cashew tokens into, let's say, a client that is TIPS compliant, and wherever you go, the client can automatically connect to a Wi-Fi and spend the cashew tokens in the next Wi-Fi that you get. Is that kind of, yes, like the vision? This is incredible.
The vision of Tollgate itself is very narrowly scoped. It enables anyone to be a ISP, or in the case of water or electricity, provider of water or electricity. Essentially, it enables anyone to sell a stream of goods for bearer instruments in real time. And with internet, that's particularly easy to do because, like, you don't need physical wires or anything. And like you said, mesh, well, FIPS is what makes it a mesh, because when you might be familiar with BGP in the internet, where nodes peer with each other, in FIPS essentially there's no BGP, no notion of BGP, or no notion of there being autonomous systems and then subjects to those autonomous systems. So you and your residential IP address are probably not an autonomous system, but your ISP might be. So on FIPS, everyone is an autonomous system, essentially, and everyone generates their own identity with an NPAP. And it is a mesh because there is no authority managing the network. So the way the internet was meant to be, essentially. But Tollgate is very narrowly scoped to how do you monetize infrastructure that you build. So if I, like, in a pre-FIPS world, I might have one internet gateway which I want to sell to five neighbors, and now my five neighbors can cancel their internet contracts and buy internet from me. So we are essentially six households sharing the cost of one internet connection, and it's kind of a tree that grows outwards from the gateway. In a post-FIPS world, there might be, say, two gateways among 20 neighbors, and we can form a mesh, like you said, with edges all over the place and different prices for different packets, depending on which edge they take. FIPS is still a work in progress. Jonathan Corgan is gifting that to the world, and we're still waiting for him to implement an API that exposes information that we need to the application layer, so that we can essentially swap out the firewall rules that we're currently using to manage gateway access with FIPS, and then we can have much more fine-grained control of where packets flow and stuff like that. Whether it's with or without FIPS, we're building tooling to monetize the infrastructure that you put in place. So you, as the owner of the infrastructure, can monetize it, which is one of the reasons that mesh networks rarely scale.
Do we already have a SOX 5 proxy on top of FIPS?
FIPS is just a tool that manages the direction in which packets flow. It's not on the application layer. So basically, you map your NPAP to a IPv6 address, and then you get backward compatibility through a TAN adapter. So from your machine, FIPS will look like So to you on your machine, SIPs will look like a VPN. And your application layer will sit on top of it without really knowing that things are like that you're actually not using IP. Well, you are using IP, but it's derived from an NPub, not from an authority. So to your question about SOX 5, pretty much anything you do on the application layer should work on FIPS as well. Recently, I saw a demo where someone had a SOX 5 proxy and did multiple hops over FIPS to make an onion system a bit like Tor. But yeah, I don't see why it shouldn't just work. I might be missing something here.
Got it. No, I just meant if there is someone's running a paid SOX 5 proxy or a VPN over FIPS.
I haven't seen VPNs over FIPS yet, but I've seen FIPS over overlays. So you would use, many people don't physically connect their FIPS nodes, even though they could. They could just form their own mesh. But often your FIPS peer might not be your direct neighbor, but might be someone in a different country. So then you would use the internet as transport. So instead of connecting your computer to their computer with a LAN cable, you would have this internet overlay underneath. And I don't specifically remember seeing people use VPNs, but yeah, I don't see why you could use it underneath or above. I've seen people do multi-WAN bonding underneath FIPS, for instance. So yeah, you can do all sorts of things on all the layers.
So right now, Tollgate still uses this captive portal, as we said, but what's the current status of an app that does that automatically?
There was an app demoed by a Solvench participant about 2-3 weeks ago called... Alex demoed this app where it was essentially you have a PWA on your phone, which has a cashew wallet in it. And when your phone connects to a Wi-Fi access point that is a tollgate, the app will detect that it's a tollgate and buy 1 megabyte at a time. This was originally started by Enrique in our earlier cohort, but at the time we didn't have routers paying other routers yet. So we didn't have the ability to extend existing sessions. So we kind of stalled his progress and Alex finished it and integrated his work. A couple of days ago. Along those lines, there was also progress in there was the app and there were Lightning payments, right? That was another very commonly requested UI feature, which kind of sat on the back burner because we were trying to get router-to-router payments, automatic router-to-router payments going. But both of these now exist. Hopefully you will be seeing a lot less of captive portals because the machines will be dealing with the captive portals for you. But we will be using some form of firewall. Like captive portals are essentially UIs for managing firewall rules, and we will be using some sort of firewall rule based solution until we use FIPS instead.
I guess my only question is, how would you? Like, imagine that in the future there are a lot of nodes using Tollgate. How would you prevent somebody from setting up a fictitious node that doesn't actually provide you internet, but instead just, takes the SATs for themselves?
They could do that, and they could get away with it, but they only get away with it for as many sites as you give them. So if you're buying internet from a gateway you've never bought from before, you should probably give it at most one sat, see whether you get the performance you expect, and then buy another sat worth of internet if you need and if you want to. So this isn't a kind of a KYC relationship like you would typically have with an ISP who gives you a SIM card and then you can go and complain. It's more like you buy as little as you possibly can, and then you top up. So ideally, you're topping up multiple times a second because you want to keep using that gateway. And if you don't like it, you switch to somewhere else. And you need to monitor. You might be familiar from Noster with the concept of smart client, dumb server. Well, here it's smart customer, dumb gateway. Like you don't you don't rely on the gateway to manage an account for you. Instead, you keep the money client side and you only buy as much as you need, and then you extend your session on demand. So existing captive portals actually do have this problem, where if, for instance, you buy internet on an airplane, you might buy $10 worth of internet credit, and then you have a MAC address associated with that session, and anyone who sees your MAC address on the network can copy your MAC address and use your session as well. So this is a vulnerability of captive portals in general, because MAC addresses can't sign a Nostr event like an NPUB can. So they're simply not secure. But when you're spending eCash or some bare instrument on a per megabyte basis, now the most they can steal from you is 1 megabyte. And if they do that 10 times over, you stop buying a megabyte, because effectively you're being jammed by someone in your proximity.
Yeah, if you're not paying per packet, are you even doing it right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense. It's just, for me, I guess it's hard to imagine this working, I guess, on the long term, because, you know, because it would be pretty easy for somebody to, you know, to skim a few sats here and there, essentially. Because, like, yeah, if it's per megabyte, you know, just the TCP and UDP data connecting from, you know, the routing data, they could basically, you know, fuzz that a bit to make it seem like you're using more than you actually are. Or they could, I don't know, do something.
I don't think any of that is like Tollgate specific. Your ISP would be doing that, and there's like
of course.
It reminds me a bit of DDoS, because on the internet also you can be a cost can be imposed on you by someone else doing something like pinging you or whatever. So both sides have a loss, and it's potentially asymmetric if the attacker controls lots of infrastructure he doesn't have to pay for. But here, keep in mind that the attacker needs to be, in the case of Wi-Fi, they need to be within 300 meters of your antenna. So for this to scale, if they want to skim a lot of sats from you, they would have to be within 300 meters, and they would have to keep rotating their identity and repeatedly trick your device into giving them sats. So, and you might find that they're getting a few millisats, so we very quickly hit the limit where our small frequent granular payments, from the perspective of a mint, were just a DDoS attack on the mint. And because our transactions were so small. And there's this thing called Spielman channels, which some people might be familiar with from the early days of Lightning, where the payment channels could only go one way. Well, there's this brilliant mathematician who figured out how to apply Spielman channels to Cashew, so you can essentially rebuild Lightning on top of Cashew. So now we only need to interact with the mint once when we open a channel, and once when we want to close the channel, and all the payments in between are entirely peer to peer between the recipient and between the customer and the gateway. So if you're trying to skim some sats, I can open a channel to you, and I buy 100th of a sat worth of internet from you. And if you don't deliver the internet, I close the channel without buying anything else. And so we have this how do you say, it's not non-custodial because the mint is the custodian, but your ISP is no longer your bank. While if you have a prepaid SIM card, your ISP kind of takes on the role of managing a bank account. You can, thanks to Spielman channels, you can take the amount that's transacted as almost as close to zero as you like. And you can just close the channel if your counterparty is being dishonest.
We live in a future where even eCash payments are not scalable enough. That's That's wild.
But there is a scalability solution for that. And if you use that scalability solution, your counterparty gets literally nothing. And the cost of performing that attack far outweighs the benefit.
Yeah, with this, you can actually pay per packet. Just put the channel update
in the packet. There is some, like, packets are routed. Routers do the routing, but you... Tollgate lives on the application layer. FIPS is on the routing layer, and below that is like switches and stuff, which are just ASICs. But essentially, FIPS would do really fast routing on a per packet basis, like per packet decisions, and Tollgate passes rules to FIPS, which FIPS will then implement, or in this case, firewall rules. So we pass rules to the firewall tool. So we don't handle the individual packets. That would be too much for the CPU. There are like ASICs for these kind of things. We do have very granular control. Like as much as the hardware allows for, essentially.
And that's really good progress. Bullish.
There's still a lot of work to be done. Like a lot of this, what I said now is not fully in place.
And there are no balloon Wi-Fi routers yet either. So more work to be done.
Well, yes, a lot of work to be done around balloons as well, because Wi-Fi is an IEEE standard defined by a standardization body, IEEE, and they have timeouts in their packets. So if you send a Wi-Fi packet and you use a very big, high-quality antenna, and I receive it from, say, a kilometer away with a very good, high-quality antenna, even if the packet is fully intact and I could like pass it on to higher layers in the TCP/IP stack, my Wi-Fi chip will discard it because the hardware that I'm using was implemented according to the standard, and the standard includes a timeout. So if your packet has propagated for more than 300 meters worth of time, then the chip just treats it as worthless and throws it away. I think part of the reason they may have defined the standard this way is because they don't want people doing really long distance Wi-Fi connections, because otherwise we all like effectively jam each other's spectrum if too many people are sharing the same frequency. But it kind of sucks if you want to make a long range connection and there's no open public standard for it. There is LoRa, but most people might be familiar with LoRa as in 800 megahertz and 400 megahertz with really bad chips, where you need like three messages to transmit a Bitcoin transaction over your LoRa device. Recently, there was a something called Wi-Fi Halo, which came to market. That was just a slightly different IEEE standard. Now you get, I think, up to 15 kilometers out of your Wi-Fi router. And all of a sudden, it makes much better use of the available spectrum on the same 800 megahertz frequency that we traditionally associated with LoRa. But yeah, again, we have a timeout at 15 kilometers. So if you want to make a global internet or a fallback network and you want to rely less on IP-based infrastructure, say you want to do a FIPS ping from here to the other side of the world, but you don't want to rely on traditional IP infrastructure, there's no way. You have to do an internet overlay. Starlink isn't going to relay your thing either. This is where we have to look at the ham radio operators who are able to literally send a little blip of data around the globe back to themselves without any third parties involved. They like bounce their waves off the clouds and stuff. And one of the things they have is these Pico balloons, some of which fly for like 2 years straight at 12 kilometers altitude. Right now, they're just putting like some radio toys on there, playing with them. But there are some really advanced chips like the Samtec 1280, which can transmit more than a megabit of data over without any timeout, like as far as you want, like because they're modulating the spectrum with LoRa, and they're using 2.4 gigahertz frequency spectrum, which is an ISM band in all jurisdictions around the globe. So if you were to fly one of those Semtech LoRa chips, and if you get your radio stuff right on both ends, you might be able to like contact that balloon at 12 kilometers until it flies out of your line of sight, out of your horizon, which at that altitude is about 300 kilometers horizontal distance. So, there's a lot that can be done with balloons. Essentially, we could make our own $30 a piece Starlink alternative. And that space is still quite like DIY friendly and quite like open for people to do whatever they like, and given that they do it within certain safety constraints for airplanes and stuff. I'm hopeful that we might be able to soon make a really cheap Starlink alternative where 1 month of a regular person's salary can essentially pay for a wire around the globe. Of course, 1 megabit isn't much, but we have multi-WAN bonding and things like that. So if you have 10 balloons and you get 1 megabit each, that adds up quite quickly.
That's fucking awesome. Big plans, indeed.
The work just keeps piling up.
Gotta ship faster and higher.
Yes.
So next up, we have NoStream. They've had a busy week as well. NoStream is a TypeScript relay implementation, and they have added support for NIP45. This is the count where the relay tells you how many events are on that relay for a given query so that you don't have to download all of them. Useful for things like reactions. They've also added support for NIP62. That's the right to vanish. Once such a signed event comes on the relay will delete all data that this pub key has authored. And they've also fixed their filter scheme to now also support uppercase tags, which was recently added to the NIP. Also, they've added gzip and xz compression to event import and export. This is not user-facing, but now the operators can move larger event dumps between their relays without any custom extra tooling. They've also introduced some benchmarking harnesses and optimizations for the filter to SQL translation. So, filters are the requests that we send via the Nostr WebSocket, and SQL is the database that actually has the events. Also, some fixes to the whitelist and blacklist pub key matching, which had a bug that caused some wrong results. And finally, they are using a deterministic tiebreaker so that concurrent inserts no longer race on equal created at timestamps. Further, some restrictions for relays to trust the X forwarded for only from configured trusted proxies. And then also they've added all of these new features added to their NIP11 relay information message, where relays advertise what capabilities they have. And into the releases section of this week, Primal shipped a new Android release where they are now have a dedicated feed for curated feeds or and popular users and follow packs. So these now all get their dedicated tab where you can see more of these. There's also a feed editor where you can use the Primal's advanced search and save these results as dedicated feeds. So if you want to have some custom keyword searches across multiple parameters, that is now easily savable so that you can come back to that same search query. Also, NIP5 are now finally verified in the UI for profiles. As well, they've added a in-feed audio player. So whenever you have an audio file that is attached inline in event, it gets a nice player UI where you can play and pause, etc. And their NIP46 Nostr Connect. These are the remote bunker signing schemes. now you can reuse the same camera path for the signer pairing and the wallet linking. So some nicer UI improvements. StirFry, a very popular relay implementation, also shipped some things. They've added Prometheus write path metrics. So this, yeah, with this you can, I'm not quite sure what you can do with it, but you can do something. And they are now also...
It essentially allows you to view like data, like for example, events were ingested at this time, this many events, it took this amount of time to do that. Queries took this long for those events, etc., etc. It's like debugging information, essentially.
Thanks, that's helpful. They've also added better logging, specifically regarding bandwidth. So now they track for every connection the bytes up and downloaded, as well as the compression ratios used. So that all helps operators to better track and log their activity. And they've also now added they switched from a hard-coded filter tag limit to a runtime configurable one. So if you want to run a relay that allows quite complex filter tag queries, then you can configure your instance as such. And also they've adapted some of the NIP42 authentication handling to be more in line with the actual protocol. It used to be a notice message, and now it is an OK message on failure responses, as the NIP actually specifies it. It's good to see that StirFry keeps getting maintained since it's so popular and commonly used. Shopster, the Noster marketplace, had a sprint of security fixes and audits, and they found a couple things that are now addressed. So make sure that you're upgrading your instance. They had a stored JavaScript hole in the storefront links, which allowed seller to visitor script execution. That sounds quite dangerous. They're now also properly escaping the storefront policy HTML rendering and block the reflected XSS. And they closed an unauthenticated cached event deletion API, which allowed cross-user data removal. So you could handily take down the products of your competition. Seems like a useful feature. Also, they now require authentication for cached message reads. Seems also important. And some further storefront mutations and event cache endpoints are behind proper authentication now. And there were two server-side request forgery findings. And one more functional bug was to make the failed relay publish queue safe against replay. And they also repaired some broken wallet event fetch logic. And the store card discounts are now validated again before checkout. So good to see that they're making an audit, and seems like they found some nasty bugs which are now addressed. So yeah, again, if you're running an instance, make sure you're up to date. And Wisp continues their mission on having a nice and usable Noster client. They've added normie mode. And the normie mode is where no bitcoins are shown, but just fiat-denominated amounts throughout the app. And instead of zapping, you're just sending money. What's interesting is that this mode is not active if you log in with Amber, since only non-normal people use Amber. But if you create a new account, then you automatically get put into the normie mode. So yeah, if you don't want to be a normie, check out Amber. Also some improvements for onboarding, where you can now pick topics and get a good follow list right away and a better feed. And also a kind of tutorial on how to make your first post. Also, they've added a For You feed, which blends the extended follows with the trending events and followed hashtags. So instead of just the chronological timeline or just the trending events, now you have something that's in between. They've also started work on NIP29 groups. So NIP29 are the relay-based groups. And here now you can join a group and post messages. I'm not sure if they have also manage the administrator side. So if an admin of a group can add people, but at least if you're a user of the group, that will work. And there was also a bug regarding NIP42 authentication. Before an issued group event, admin side was failing. Okay, so no, that seems actually that the admin part is integrated as well, which is cool to see. And now also the notes are broadcast to the NIP65 inbox relay of the mentioned pub keys. So better spec compliance with the outbox model.
I wonder if the normie mode shows the like the fiat price at the time of scene, or if it does the conversion considering the time when the sats were actually paid. Because that could I can see that causing way more confusion than actually helping normies understand what's going on. If they are showing you the current rate, then it might be misleading, or it might be confusing to see that you, for example, send a SAP worth, I don't know, let's say $1, and then the price moves, and then you see, oh, I only send, I don't know, 80 cents. That might cause user confusion, and then also in the other direction, if they're showing the historical rates, then users might not understand why, if they receive $1, now they only have 80 cents, stuff like that.
I would guess that they just have the current exchange rate locally in the app and then apply that. Keeping an historic track of the exchange rate is probably too much work.
Yeah, that would be my assumption as well. But I don't know if they like thought this through, or like if maybe they did some tests with some users and like figured that it's okay. It's just like it's a very simple thing, but I can still foresee how that could lead to more confusion rather than just explaining you receive or you send Bitcoin and that's it.
Also, interesting here is the unit bias. And we're all zapping 21 sats and think it's cool. But if you see that in dollar value, then it's a bit shameful to toss that amount.
For now, you know,
I think normies deserve to be confused. And it'd be much better if they came to Amber. If that's a good enough push for them to actually come to Amber.
Oh, well, and of course you can change that in the settings, right? It's just that the default depends on the login method. But you don't have to put your NSEC in just to test that feature. We also have a new release of NurNode version 0.8.4. They have added scheduled posts. So if you publish an event to a relay that is operated by the NurNode guys, then and the timestamp of that event is in the future, then the relay will hold it and only serve it to readers when the time was is reached. So a easy, simple way to make scheduled posts possible. They've also added a one-tap zapping feature to the livestream cards. And the zats and associated message will appear in the streamer's chat overlay, which is cool to see. I was always curious on why don't all relays deal with future dated events as scheduled events? Why isn't this part of the spec?
I have no idea, but I guess it kind of depends on their use case.
Yeah, we do have some plus minus 2 days time staggering in NIP 17 DMs. So that would break. But for unencrypted kind ones, etc., it would be helpful.
We could make that part of a spec. We just submit, you know, PR to the NIPs and, you know, make that happen. Because it makes sense to me.
Yep, I see no harm in this. I don't know why. I just think nobody thought of it this way.
And now we have both Nunode and Wisp are both doing it this way. And I think what Nostria as well. I don't remember that, but it's an auction. We also have a new announcement of Topaz in version 0.0.2. That's a Nostr relay for Android. So similar mission to Citrine, to have a local relay where you can put and get information or events from. And so your Nostr clients, if you connect them to the local host of Topaz, the local relay, will work fully offline, at least with reading the events that are in that relay. And then also, if you're offline and you want to send an event, you can put it on this relay and from there on broadcast it as soon as you're back online. Really cool to see. I also think it would be a cool idea to have another app which would crawl your Nostr relays, external Nostr relays, and get all the data off your feed and just lazily download it in the background so that when you open any Nostr client, it instantly has all of the interesting data that you're interested in without having to connect to external relays. So good to see the local first infrastructure gradually improving. And another new application released in version 1.0.0 is Stablecraft. It's a progressive web app for playing music and podcasts. So they pull music from the podcast RSS feed as well, and then use Nostr for authentication as well as social features and Lightning for value-for-value payments. I'm not sure if they have an integrated Lightning wallet, but that would be cool to see as well. They've also fine-tuned a little bit their cache with a 15-minute timeout and are now reparsing the RSS feeds daily instead of every 720 hours. So that's what, weekly?
No, I think it's monthly.
Yeah, looks like it. Don't do math live on air. Never works. And another new application, which I'm quite excited about, is NipLock. That is a password manager which stores your encrypted passwords in NIP17 gift wrap direct messages. So each password is its own NIP17 DM to your own key. And so as long as you have your NSEC, and of course that can be 12 words as well, with an optional passphrase if you would like, then you can get access to your passwords. I think that's quite powerful. The idea that you can remember 12 words and get access to your passwords is a powerful feature. And it also, of course, natively supports cross-device synchronization since as long as any app that has the NSEC can fetch and decrypt the events. And this also works with external signers like Amber via the NIP46 bunker protocol or the NOS2X browser extension.
This is cool, but it's also scary, because it basically means like your quote-unquote encrypted backup is publicly available. So with a normal password manager, if your password manager key leaks, you still have, I guess, some time, or at least you have like, not necessarily anyone can get access to your encrypted passwords. But with something like this, your encrypted passwords are freely available everywhere. On the other hand, maybe it's okay to assume that if someone gets your private key, they can also get your encrypted passwords. So, I don't know. Cool project, though.
And you could put it on a relay that supports NIP42 auth, which would be some access right management, too.
Well, but if they have it, the private key, then that's not going to help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also another thing is that somebody could just spam gift wraps under your pub key and then prevent you from accessing your passwords, essentially.
Yeah, that's a known problem regarding Gitrots. I think Hazard has some opinions on that. But it's, yeah, very, very real. The only thing that comes to mind regarding that is that at least no one would really know you're using the Gitrots for the passwords specifically. But yeah, for sure a problem.
Yeah, Bitward in CLI just had a breach. And so I'm not very bullish on password managers in general. But yeah, if we're going to have them, why not with the Nostr private key?
And it's still like this two-layer encryption here, basically. You know, you could use your NSEC to encrypt a database, like your, for example, KeePass database, and encrypt the database. And so you have the NSEC for the database backup, but you still need a passphrase and potentially hardware security token to get to the actual passwords.
Yeah, I wonder if like something like this could be perhaps better using Blossom, like just encrypt your passwords, upload the encrypted thing to Blossom, something like that. I'm not sure what the benefit of having each individual password be its own event is really worth it. Like what that gives you exactly.
Yeah, this is similar to the PASS architecture, which creates an encrypted PGP encrypted file for each password. And the idea is here that you don't have to decrypt the entire database in order to fetch one password.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you want to decrypt multiple passwords, you have to do a bunch of cryptographic operations.
Yeah.
Well, you do with every password manager, because most of them have like, I forgot what the algorithm is called, but basically they have like one password that then encrypts the first key and then a key is derived from that password for the next key, so that you can't just take a random thing from the database and decrypt that. You need to have the whole chain, essentially. I forgot what the algorithm is called.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Isn't that Argon too?
Maybe.
I'm not so sure. Next up, we have some progress for Flotilla Budapit. So Flotilla is, of course, the NIP29 relay group client. And this is specifically is a fork thereof by the Budapit community, who have integrated a lot of the NIP34 Git over Nostr workflows natively together. So this gives you NIP29 for things like repo discussions, but still uses the repo announcement from the saved Grasp relays. So a Grasp relay is a Nostr relay that knows a lot of Git stuff. and the Grasp is the implementation where most Git over Nostr things are running. So this is mainly in maintenance work in their last releases, where they're just staying close to the upstream flotilla. But they did add some additional things, like restoring the repo discussions itself and having a sticky repo tabs visible on the details page at all time. So good progress for Git over Nostr. And another first-time mention on the Compass newsletter is RX Nostr. That's an RX JavaScript-based Nostr library. They've had a couple maintenance releases, version 3.7.2 and 3.7.4, where they've added a default Schnorr signature verifier, which in the past always had to be brought by the developer directly. And they've also paired the crypto library at the Nobles curves, which had a bug, and so they updated that. And finally, they've made an argument of create RX Nostr optional, so you can have a quicker integration inside the library with zero configurations. And we have yet another Nostr password manager launched, Keep. in version 1.0.0. That is a Nostr native password and secret manager. They've now added reproducible builds, as well as removed a Google ML kit or SXing, two different libraries. Reason is that they can this way get rid of the Google Play Services dependencies, which is great. They've also published an Exodus privacy scan, which shows that they have zero trackers, and they are now releasing on Zap Store as well. Really cool.
Are you sure that's correct with Keep? Because I'm pretty sure it's a threshold signer for Frost.
Oh, yes, you're right. And that is a bug. So yes, this is a, yeah, you're right. That's the a remote signer app that uses threshold Frost signatures in the background. So cool to see that they've reached the milestone of version 1.0. And let's talk about Flotilla. They've had two releases, version 1.7.3 and 4. They now have added Kind9 wrapping for richer room conversations. So Kind9 are the non-chat content types. So things like calendar events, polls, and other non-chat payloads still preserve the room's context, but they are not seen directly in the feed itself. That's a more proper way of rendering things correctly. We've talked about this last week as well, and their Huddlebot was on to give more details. So if you want that, go back. Now, since then, they've shipped it. And yeah, they've also now added specific support for the Aegis URL scheme. So that's another NIP46 client, and apparently that needed some custom work to work properly for this specific signer app. You can now also share support for space invites and room mentions. And on mobile, you can now paste images via the clipboard, save drafts, and do video in calls as well. Also, the What Web of Trust Relay version 0.2.1, they have migrated their database to LMDB and now have a better Web of Trust bootstrapping mechanism, where the relay doesn't have to continuously connect to other relays to fetch all of this data for building the initial trust graph. So that should hopefully make it not being rate limited by other relays. And they've also made some version increases of their crypto libraries with security fixes. And also they've patched some issues with the NIP11 relay announcement software URL and version string for this release too. Next up, we have Polarama, the Nostr client for polls in the web browser, added some security fixes regarding key handling in a hardened implementation, as well as expiring cache direct messages on logout. So shared devices do not leak prior user state, which is helpful if you're sharing a browser with someone else. They've also moved the local key to a secure browser storage and improved some JSON parsing for Kind0 profiles so that malformed profiles cannot crash a session. And also the HTTPS deep linking for polarama.fun. Now you can share poll URLs and open the app directly. So if someone from the browser sends you that link and you click it on the phone, it will open in the app if you have it installed. Also now author names are clickable in poll results and you can go to their profile.
Yep. So it's local. The local key is now stored in the secure device storage, not the browser storage, which is a security hardening implementation. A lot of these PRs that are opening are because we've entered the summer of Bitcoin program, which has a lot of students coming up and contributing to open source Bitcoin Nostr related projects, which is great. Polarama itself was, when it first came out, it was mostly a vibe coded app. or it not a vibe coded app, but the transition from a polls app to a full client was heavily vibe coded. So now we're still doing AI assisted coding, but now we're manually reviewing a lot of things to make sure that we're not very loose on security. So yeah, hardening it wherever we find things.
And then also for Formster, the Noster Form Suite now has a better URL support, so you can embed audio and video URLs in the form directly. They've also introduced i18n for the web app, as well as an import feature for existing Google Forms, so you can migrate out of the Gulag. And finally closed a privacy leak by removing sensitive key logs from the browser console.
These keys were not private keys though. These were keys like a form response URL or something, which is still bad. So it's better that it's removed. I think the Google Forms onboarding feature is really good. As you said, helps you move out of the Gulag. And this was we were seeing a very demanded feature of an org would say, we would love to move to Formster, but we already have a Google Form and it's two sections wide, we can't easily move it. So we just created an onboarding tool which helps them migrate away from Google Forms easier. And the i18n and the media one is also really good. I don't think even Google Forms lets you embed media on the forms itself, which was a requested feature by one of our users. They wanted to play audio bites and do a survey on those audio bites. So we made sure that they were able to do that.
And also Formster has been shipping version 1.3.0 and version 1.4.0. They've implemented a better support for repeating events with custom R rules. So you can have a complex schedules that are more than just single cadence cases, as well as fixed a bug where repeating events drifted according to time zones. And now it uses the properly standardized UTC for all under the hood dates. You can now also add shared events to your own calendar and have notifications on different calendars as well. Better login and loading paths were also introduced. All of these projects are coming nicely together.
Yep, this is calendar is going to be... So Rama is the lead developer on this, and he has been shipping like crazy. And you're going to see even more updates on calendar as we move along. I think it's now on feature parity with Google Forms already, except that you can't yet invite someone via an email. Right now, you have to invite them via NPUB. But that's also getting worked on. And we might soon have that as well. And we'll also have calendar bookings, like the Calendly feature, which we already have a PR for and is under review. And really excited for all the things that are coming out from the calendar front.
Do we have an appointment booking tool yet in there?
Yes. There's a PR that's already in place and we are reviewing it right now. So very soon, perhaps in the next release or in the one next to that, we were going to have it.
Nice. This is one of the final features that I'm relying on Nextcloud at the moment. So I'm looking forward to migrating out of that. And we have a short rapid fire section of a couple clients that are shipping. NoteDeck has the fourth beta release of their version 0.10.0. with better column rendering and relay pool fixes. The Outbox model continues to be a pain. Also, we have the Noster.blue, I think a first-time mention on this newsletter, a Rust-based Noster client. They've made some updates to their Deoxys framework and improved their native audio bridge as well. and a new client released called Clip Relay, a cross-device clipboard sync tool that just shares your clipboard encrypted via Noster relays. So you can move from your desktop to Android clipboard as magically as in the Apple prison. Also, Captain's Log, that's the Damo's long-form writing article tool, has some alpha builds, so they're prepping a proper release regarding sync relays and liveness detection. Let's talk a bit about apps that are in development and not yet released. We have White Noise RS, the Rust backend of White Noise, which is in a current massive refactoring that moves away from a singleton to a per account session view. So the goal is here to break the library up into smaller per account surfaces, which are easier to reason and test about. So that's continues that work with account sessions and account manager scaffolding, and also drafts and settings, as well as message ops, group reads and writes, memberships, push notifications, key package reads, and group creation are now their own session-owned surfaces. Yeah, guys, what else is to say about the White Noise RS refactor?
Yeah, I mean, it all started because, because I was personally finding it hard to work in the existing code base, and there were a lot of issues surfacing, like random small bugs. Like, for example, one that's pretty obvious is the message delivery status. That was essentially, if you have two different accounts in the same device and both of the accounts were in the same group, if you sent a message from one of those accounts, it will be marked as sent for both of them without, you know, a way to essentially change that. Because, because we only had one database, essentially, that contains all of the group state, and everything needs to all the time have columns saying, okay, this action is for this pub key, etc., etc. And yeah, and that started a conversation between Jeff and I where we talked about rewriting a bunch of things in how it works. And now, hopefully, after this refactor is done, I feel like we're going to be in a better state where those kinds of bugs don't happen anymore, hopefully. And also, testing is hopefully, going to be easier. Because right now, if you probably looked at our repos, a bunch of tests are very flaky. And it's for a lot of reasons, mostly reader related, but also the fact that every time we need to test something, we need to initialize this massive white noise object with a bunch of stuff that's not even, you know, often not even related to what we're testing, and it's just a pain. And this rewrite is going to make it better, hopefully. I rambled a bit there, but whatever.
Yeah, to me, the biggest win here is getting rid of the, or stop relying on this massive god object that is the white noise singleton. I think this will lead to like a more intuitive API and less duplication, because what we were doing is we had the internal API was more modularized, but then we had to repeat a bunch of methods so they would hang from the white noise struct so they could be used from this massive object. So to me, this is one of the biggest wins on this of this refactor initiative. I hope it goes well. It's a very big refactor and still in implementation. But yeah, I think I'm not sure, like, when do we expect the public APIs to change? Danny, do you have some insight on that?
That's a hard question. I mean, Mubarak and I are working on it. We're mostly done, but those last few phases are going to take a bit. It's probably going to be like middle of next week, I would say. You know, plus and minus few days, I guess.
Oh, but so the refactor will include the public API changes. I thought we were going to do like a first phase where we change everything internally, keeping the public API. And then once we have like the internals a little bit more battle tested and being used within the Flutter app, we're going to migrate the public API. Is that not going to be the case?
Well, that's going to be later. That's another phase. But like for now, it's going to be... well, there's going to be some changes to the public API, but nothing major. After that, we're going to have that other migration that we talked about like yesterday. But that's going to be different, I think.
Also, the work on the white noise front-end Flutter app continues. There's no support for blocking and unblocking users, as well as a clearing a chat and deleting a chat, as well as leaving and deleting a chat. So these were previously on the Rust side, and now the Flutter front-end exposes those too. There is an offline notice if your phone is offline, so that users know that new messages won't be arriving. And finally, since there's this migration from regular key packages to addressable and replaceable key packages, now in the developer setting, there is a new button with delete legacy key packages so that you can manually rotate out of the older version of the key packages into the newer one, where each client should only have one key package available.
Yeah, I want to talk a bit about the specifically the leave group, which seems like such a, I don't know, like a trivial feature. But in reality, it ended up being a more tricky than we anticipated. And the reason for that is when a user leaves the group, that has to be done as a commit, because that changes the MLS tree. So if you just want to remove yourself, you have a problem, because you are then no longer in the group, and then you cannot create the necessary commit for everyone to sync to that state. So you're not really able to actually leave. And the previous workaround or like the initial way we thought about solving this was you would create a proposal that says like, okay, just remove me from the group, and then you would share that proposal with group members, and then you would have to wait until an admin got online and was able to actually create the commit that removes you. And that, of course, is a very bad UX. There is no reason for users to have to wait for someone else to be online in order to leave a group, right? And of course, they could just delete everything locally and be done with that, but then that also leaves the group in a dirty state. So we are doing it differently now, and that requires some changes to the specification in order to allow for a special kind of commit message that is a self-remove. That instead of trying to make this feature work using the normal remove from group, it's a new kind of message, and that can be committed by any member. So you no longer have to wait for an admin to be online in order to create the commit. And that then required the respective change in MDK, and that's in place. And the problem now is that that creates a transition period where groups that are already existing don't have this proposal extension in the group. So what we're also doing is creating a mechanism for groups to upgrade to include this new functionality. And all this rambling is to say that the way it will work in the white noise app, basically, is if you create, once this ships, if you create a new group with people that support this feature, then it would work nicely. But you will have the restriction that you will not be able to invite to that group people that haven't updated the app. If you create a new group with someone that hasn't updated the app, that will work as it does now, but you won't have this leave group feature. And what we're doing is we're creating the mechanism such that once every member of the group updates, then the group can be upgraded to have this additional capability. And we're doing this in a way where it's, of course, not hard-coded to this one particular instance of a new feature, but we're doing it in an extensible way such that in the future, when there's more features that require this sort of special new kind of commit, it will work in the same way. So groups can be gracefully upgraded to new features.
Well, that's the tricky thing about a multi-implementation group messaging scheme, that for many cases, not everyone will have the same capabilities. And so a graceful handling of that is quite useful. We also have changes to the MDK, the Marmot Development Kit. There was mainly interoperability work happening. So now we have a required capabilities, which is the lowest common denominator of all the invited group members' capabilities. And so if there are, this was initiated by Amethyst in their integration of Marmot and White Noise, so that both are compatible. There's also
This is, sorry to cut you off, Max. This is exactly the thing I was talking about. So when you create a new group, you can check, okay, you want to invite Alice, Bob, and Charlie, and you see what features do they implement, and you can know that from the key packages. And then you create the group with the most amount of features that everyone supports.
Yeah, that's very useful. Also, the self-update wire format is no more standardized across implementations. So these self-updates are how you can rotate your own key package. And there were some issues that you would slowly or silently drift out of sync or out of consensus between members when you self-rotated your keys. Also, there was some robustness handling for inviting key packages, that you first parse that key package before persisting it. Because if you would have gotten a malformed invitee, then that could have messed up the MLS state. There's now also a receiver side admin depletion validation and some fixes to the memory storage backend to make sure that no security critical state is leaked. And finally, now it exposes a group required proposals, which shows clients which proposals must be in the next commit without having to go deep into MDK itself.
Yeah, that's also related. So basically, the thing is we need to surface the required capabilities, basically, of the group. we have to show, we have to allow users of MVK, so for example, white noise RS, to be able to show which capabilities are available in order for them to, for example, hide certain features because they are not available in a specific group.
We also have some improvements to Noster with two T's. That's a Noster web client. And they have migrated out of NIP4 and to NIP44 for their encryption across mute lists and bookmarks and people lists. They've also removed support for the legacy kind 30,000 mute list and now use the encrypted kind 10,000 flow instead. Always good to see clients migrating out of NIP4. That is an insecure encryption standard and should not be used. Zap.cooking, the Noster receipt sharing client, had a busy week too. They've now added a nourish receipt scoring. So you can rank your receipts according to nutritional scores. And also did some refactoring on how comments and threads are handled, as well as some UI polish on the receipt side, as well as a unified media uploader button and a profile replies tab. All landing in the user interface. Rightster, the Noster-based taxi or cab hailing application, did some refactorings where both rider and driver parts of the protocol logic that are shared are now in a common module that both can use. And they've also added a kind 3,189 event, which is a driver ping receiver for the road fare side of the system. So good to see that app still progressing.
Do you know if this works anywhere? Or is it still like under heavy development?
Well, I think that the developer is in Las Vegas and that's where he's trying to bootstrap it. I bring it up since there's the Bitcoin conference happening right now. And I wonder how many rides are happening via Ridester there.
That'd be really cool if this project succeeds.
We also have a new addition to the Blossom spec in Bud 1. There's now a sunset header for blob expiration. So if a server knows that he is going to delete a certain blob in the near future, now he can add a sunset header to the response so that clients who are currently downloading this blob will realize that it is about to be deleted and take preemptive actions before that.
Do you know if servers automatically delete stuff at that point?
I think that's an implementation decision. Yeah. So I don't think there's like a default timeout. But yeah, I guess that would depend on the implementation. The spec is very open here. Also, a new GitHub organization called ForgeSwarm landed on GitHub, and they had a spree with opening 29 new repositories in just 5 days. So they've basically published a full Noster stack from the ground up. So we have NSEC Tree, which is basically an hierarchical deterministic wallet or identity key structure, where one master key can derive an unlimited amount of unlinkable Noster identities, well, just as we are used in Bitcoin land. They've also shipped Hardwood, which is a NIP46 remote bunker signer, which is specifically made to run on a Raspberry Pi and exposed via Tor by default. Sapwood is a web management UI for these Hardwood signer applications. And they also have an Hardwood variant for ESP32 devices. So that would also work on these Helltech Wi-Fi LoRa boards, which we talked about just a bit earlier. The NSEC Tree command line interface has a is basically a command line tool for doing these derivations and Also a Shamir signature recovery flow. So always good to see more key management tools that are out there. Also, they've launched Signet, which is a decentralized identity verification protocol for Noster. So that's a QR code-based pairing flow where you can get new session pub keys and validate them and then pin and publish them to relays. So for this, they use the Noster attestations. These are a kind 31,000 event. That's NIP VA. Or credentials, endorsements, vouchers, provenance, licensing, and trust. So this is basically their attempt to consolidate a bunch of previous attestation modes into one single kind number. And then on top of that, they've built a Noster Veil, which is a privacy-preserving web of trust. This is based on the NIP 85 assertions, but backed by LSAG ring signatures. So now you can prove that you are part of a group of pub keys, which presumably all have a high Web of Trust score, but you do not reveal which of these members you are. So ring signatures is what Monero uses to make private UTXO spending possible, but the same cryptographic trick absolutely works to prove things about your Schnorr signature or Schnorr pub key. I think that's really interesting and might, for example, be a solution to the gift wrap spam problem. Because if I only look at gift wraps that have a ring signature that proves that the sender is one of the people whom I'm following, then I can disregard all the others and just filter out this one. Dave,
yeah, that
continue.
Would be awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but yeah, that would be an awesome solution, I think. But
do you know if those kinds of signatures can be created without needing interaction from like other people? Can I just like take a whatever subset of pub keys and create a ring signature as long as my pub key is within one?
Yes, correct. These are non-interactive. So other ring members do not need to participate. You just need to have their public keys, which we can get from Noster easily.
Yeah, this is a very good idea to solve the Gitwrap issue.
One problem with ring signatures specifically is that they do scale with ring sizes. So if we have a 1,000 pub key follow list, a 1,000 member ring is probably going to be quite large. If we're talking about such high membership counts, then maybe a succinct zero-knowledge proof might be more performant in terms of bandwidth or storage size, as well as verification time. But they are usually more expensive to generate and maybe a bit too much for phones. And these Forgeworn guys continue to ship with Tollbooth. That is not to be confused with Tollgate, which we talked about earlier. A Tollbooth is a L402 middleware where you can have Express, Ono, Deno, Bun, and Cloudflare workers that turn any API into basically gating it such that it only works after payment has been received. And this works especially well with NIP 90 data vending machines. And the Tollbooth announce crate, which bridges the 402 announce. That's a kind 31,402 parameterized replaceable event. And now there's also a 402 indexer, which crawls all of these announcement events and then displays them. And also the organization has been working on a NIP 29 draft collection with their suggestions on how relay-based groups could be further improved in regards to service coordinator, coordination, trust, payments, disputes, key hierarchy, resource curation, and paid API discovery. So all of these projects talked about are in TypeScript with as little dependencies as possible and a minimal bash-only supply chain for creating the tools. So really cool to see such a new organization with lots of ideas and repos joining the crew.
Yeah, it's crazy. I see that they have like 40 repositories now.
They must have many tokens to spend. We also have a new Bitcoin wallet launching called Shock Wallet. That is a Nostra native Lightning wallet with synchronization and multi-node connections. So this app pairs with one or more Lightning.pub nodes over Nostra, where you can sign payment authorizations, which are end-to-end encrypted between the wallet and the node. They've also shipped a channels dashboard UI for managing your Lightning nodes and opening, closing channels, etc. And you can also invite admins to manage this wallet via a QR code or a pub key. And they use NIP78, application-specific data, encrypted, for multi-device wallet state synchronizations. So your wallet view stays consistent between your different devices. So maybe to clarify a bit on how this is different from NIP47. NIP47, that's Nostra Wallet Connect, is an interface that your app can use to ask an existing wallet to pay or generate an invoice. And Shock Wallet uses Nostra as the wallet's own account and session transport for the underlying Lightning node. And they've also published C-Link, which is a Nostra-based session pairing protocol for wallet-to-app connections. All of this is a single TypeScript code base, and they build across web, Android, and iOS. Really cool to see more experimentation on how we can improve Bitcoin wallets with Nostra. Also, a quick announcement that Nostra Ability is no longer on GitHub. They were censored from the Gulag and brought to jail without any explanation. So now they've migrated all of their issues and trackers on Ngit, the Nostra-based Git alternative. Sad to see that censorship of developers is happening, but good to see that we have the tools to make GitHub obsolete now. So if you want to keep up to date with Nostra Ability, then go ahead and subscribe to their Nostra-based Git repositories.
Yeah, this is sad to see that there's like GitHub taking down Nostra-related organization. My guess that this is related to perhaps some something related to like how LSAP was using GitHub Actions, because otherwise, I see like really no reason or like no, I don't understand why else this could have happened. Like maybe there's some way in which he used GitHub Actions that was flagged as an abuse or of some kind.
And maybe it was just a overwhelming denial of service attack with the sheer volume of contributions by LSAT and all his agents. So GitHub might have just given up. And a really, really cool new idea landed called Nowhere. You can encode a full website in just a URL fragment. So a URL fragment is in a browser URL after an hashtag. The content there is not sent to the servers. So basically, what you get from the server is just a small web application that can interpret the parts of the URL locally. And they do some quite heavy compression as well as a dictionary substitution process to take this base64 URL and get the actual content out of this. So with a single URL, which you can totally have as a QR code and working fully offline, people can now have different types of applications like events or fundraisers, stores, petitions, messages, art, forums, whatever. And you don't really need to have an internet connection to get this content because the content is in the URL itself. Really quite impressive. And this works, for example, for store items of, I think, one product. But if you want to have more products and everything does not fit into this URL, then you can use NIP44 encryption with an ephemeral key, where the relay stores the events with a that have the full content of the website as well. But yeah, quite crazy on how much you... no, wait, so 120 character URL is a single item store. But I do think that even larger stores are still possible in just the URL. But yeah, really cool to see.
Yeah, URLs cannot be arbitrary length. I think, but there is also like not a single Linux imposed everywhere. You can get your like URLs for up to maybe like 2,000 or 3,000 characters work everywhere. Then you might have some compatibility issues on different browsers and different servers. But in this case, this is not sent to the server, so it's only like the what the browser allows. This is very, very cool. I guess it's hard to squeeze a lot of information given that limit, but still, neat idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty large, though. Like, I think it was around one or two megabytes or something like that in Chrome, which is plenty for a lot of data, like a lot of websites.
1 megabyte for the URL?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Because that's the length of the buffer in the browser, like the actual buffer that stores the data for the URL. I think it's 1 megabyte.
That's crazy. I would have expected it to be way less than that, but yeah, that's enough to do, I guess, a bunch of stuff. If you pair that with like compression that you make like ad hoc for this kind of system, you can probably squeeze a lot in.
Yeah, that's really cool. So yeah, that seems then you can have much more than just 5 items in your store. But of course, the purchasing of items, etc., that's not a static thing. So for this, you need the Noster part, but for many websites can just be static, and having them fully encoded in a URL is a cool idea. And the last two projects worth highlighting are two new ones. RelayK.it from the Soapbox team is a browser application that helps you discover relays. Quite cool, built with Shakespeare. And then we have Brainstorm Search. That's a single-page Noster search UI where you can search for usernames and get the associated pub key. Quite similar to Vertex search, but using a different Web of Trust algorithm. And that was
It would be cool to see how the different search algorithms compare. If there's like someone that builds like a, I don't know, like if you could embed both of them and see how they behave, that'd be an interesting project.
And that was it for our applications updates. And let's move on to protocols and specification work. We have a couple open PRs to the NIPS repository. The first one is, in addition to NIPS67, a EOSE completeness hint. So EOSE is how today relays mark the end of a response. But it is unclear if when they sent this info, if they still have more events available. So let's say a relay has 500 events, and when a client asks for it, it only gives 300, because that is the maximum amount of events it will return. Currently, there is no way to know that there are 200 more events. And so that means that the clients would always have to ask again if there are any files or any events in addition. And now in the EOSE message, there is also now a finish tag where then relays highlight, okay, this is the end of this request, And also, I don't have any additional data. So this will save one round trip for most cases where clients now know that the events are done. And this is a backwards compatible design. So if your relay does not support it, then your client will just fall back to the current today's heuristics. Also, a new proposal for NIP5D. Those are Noster applets. So they are on a similar design philosophy as NIP5A, which are static websites hosted over Noster, and NIP5C, which is executable WASM programs inside Noster events. So NIP5D is somewhat of a middle ground, and it's basically an applet that runs inside an iframe or a web view in a sandboxed environment, but it can be addressed via Noster events and updated through the replaceable DTAG mechanism. So this is a cool way for you to ship experiments like polls, calculators, mini games, etc. And you don't have to, it's like a common plug-in system, basically, where any iframe code can be rendered inside your client. We also have a proposed addition to NIP29, the relay-based group, to introduce subgroups. So at the moment, basically the mental model is one relay is one group. And then you can have multiple channels inside a group. But now this adds subgroups where you can have independent groups with independent admin rights. And these are, they build on top of the existing H tag, but have a kind 9,000 range moderation event scoped to this subgroup specifically. So you have dedicated admins with dedicated member lists and so on. And now you can have multiple groups on one relay, which will be quite helpful and reduce the amount of dedicated relays that we'll have to spin up. And on a second PR, NIP29 is proposed to be extended with explicit role permissions on kind 39,003. So whereas in the past, these roles were just user generated, now they're proposed to be more standardized for things like invite, add user, remove user, edit metadata, delete events, and add permissions. They can also have a time-bounded expiry. And so two relays running the same group could in the past have disagreed about who the moderator can do. But now, this is not just standardized on the different roles and tasks that can be done. We also have a proposal to extend NIP 11 with access control field for gated relay discovery. So this is a new optional tag in the NIP 11 relay information document that relays give out over the HTTP requests, where the relay can now gate different modes. So open, invite, payment, and allow list for any of the endpoints. And this is an easier way for clients to see if it has permission to get access to this relay. And if not, he doesn't even have to try to find out. We also have continued discussion on NIP 63A, the minimal payment gateway descriptor. We did cover this in the last newsletter, NIP 18. And so here they're iterating on the kind 10,164, which has a list of possible payment options, and you can have a kind of handshake mechanism to find the right and matching sender and receiver payment capability. Also, we have a proposal for agent reputation attestation. This would be kind 30,085, which is an addressable event specifically for attesting autonomous agents and services on Noster in multiple different categories like reliability or honest advertising and dispute resolution claims. So here, each attestation points to the pub key of the agent and then a score in a bounded range. So this is a way that you can make claims about, for example, data vending machines or other services, and so that your followers can find out if you had a positive or a negative experience with a bot. Also, we have further work on the proposal for NIP TPLD, that's the transient private location data, basically a live location sharing scheme on kind 20,411. What they've added now is a TTL tag, which defines how long relays are supposed to hold this information. Not sure why they're not just using the expiry tag, but maybe that is that tag. Anyhow, they're using NIP44 encryption to share your GPS coordinates to people whom you would like to share that information with, and it's one encryption per receiver of that event. We also have a breaking change to the Marmot TypeScript library in version 0.5.0. This is specifically about migrating out of the legacy kind 443 key package events to the replaceable 30,443 events. So here this means that now again, each client should only have one key package and rotate that by replacing the previous one. And on to our final section, which is the NIP deep dive section. Today, let's talk about NIP 72. These are the moderated communities we spoke about earlier in Amethyst. This predated other group ideas like the NIP 29 relay-based groups. So NIP 72 is not tied to any specific relay, but instead there are just regular Nostro events on that can be served on whatever relay or transport layer you would like. So first, you've got to define a community by publishing kind 34,550. That's an addressable, replaceable event. And here you can edit the metadata, like group name or community name and picture and description and so on, as well as some rules. And then there's also a series of moderators which have their pub keys in the P tag. Optionally, you can also have relay tags or relay hints, as well as author requests or approvals hints as well. And so these are signed by one of the moderators. And then if you want to make a post, you can address any kind, I mean, specifically kind ones or kind 30,023 long form articles or calendar events or so on. And in the A tag of this, you simply add the coordinate with first the kind number 34,550, semicolon the creator's public key, and semicolon the slug, the ID of that community. And then this would be a proposal to make a or write an event to a community. But the feature here is that by default, a client should only show events that have been approved by a moderator. So this is not anyone can write, but the idea is that moderators have to approve events that are written to a community. And in order to approve an event, the admin would publish a kind 4,550 event, which references the E tag. In the E tag, the ID of the event that is to be approved, as well as the P tag for the public key of the submitter, and the community A tag to identify the community where this goes to. And that is signed by one of the moderators, and then clients should only display events of that community that have such an associated approval event as well. So the interesting thing is here we have some spam prevention, right? Administrators will have to read through all of the proposals and they might be susceptible to spam, but then they shield regular readers by simply not approving events that they don't like, but it also gives full auditability and transparency. So you see exactly which moderator approved a event, and if it turns out that that was still a spammy or undesirable event, then this moderator could be removed from the community, or you could simply block him. And of course, your client can still see or fetch all of the other events. So if you do want to get the full unmoderated experience, that is also possible. So how does this compare to the other existing group mechanisms? Similar to NIP29, this is not encrypted. So these are all for publicly accessible events. But unlike NIP29, we don't have a read-based access right management. So all NIP72 events are readable by anyone who connects to the relay and queries for these filters. And with NIP29, we trust the relay to gate access to these events based on a whitelist of pub keys who have read permission or write permissions. And so NIP72 is more on the smart client dumb server implementation or strategy, while NIP29 does give some more requirements for relays to do certain validations before they receive or forward events. And neither NIP29 nor NIP72 are encrypted. So if you would like to have a private conversation, then consider using something like the Marmot protocol. And I think we haven't seen much adoption of this yet, in part because it is a huge burden for the moderators to approve every message in a timely manner. But then also because not many clients implemented the actual administrator features. So now that Amethyst has shipped as of this week, or at least in a pull request, these administrator functions, maybe we will see a bit of an uptick in the NIP72 communities. And our final NIP deep dive for this week is NIP57 Zaps. Always good to be able to send magic internet money over a unstoppable social network. And that's exactly what we have now for over 4 years, probably. So Zaps are a way that you can send money to a receiver and later prove to third parties that this happened. So there are four actors relevant to make this happen. The sender's client first discovers the recipient's LNURL endpoint. So this, for this, we just go to the Kind0 profile metadata and get the LUT6 or LUT16 field. And once you have the Lightning address, basically, the sending client can sign a Kind 9734 Zap request event, which describes the intent for making a payment to a specific post. So here you are already referencing the ID of the post that you want to send the money to, and also a message potentially to the receiver and the outside world. So this initial event does not get published to Noster relays, but instead directly put to the LNURL server via the callback functionality. I guess that's just HTTP. And then in return, the server will give you a Lightning invoice with the description hash committing to the request event. So here you see as the sender that you are making a payment specifically for this specific Zap kind 9735. The kind 9735 is only signed and published when the recipient has actually received the money, and he will then co-sign this event and finally put it on relays. So the again, SAP requests are kind 9,734. These are signed by the sender with the payment intent. The P tag is of the recipient's pub key, and we can have an E or an A tag for events or addressable events that are being referenced. The amounts are in millisats, and a relay tag is where the recipient should publish the final ZAP receipt. And in the content of the event is where you can put any arbitrary message that you would like to add to this payment. You can also add a K tag optionally, which is the kind number of the referenced event that you're looking for, or that you're sending the money to, which will help with filtering and finding that event and displaying it properly. And so the SAP receipt is the kind 9,735. Again, that's published by the recipient. And that's basically the confirmation of receipt of the money. So first the sender agrees that, yes, I sent money. And then the receiver agrees and publishes, yes, I've received the money as well. And here we have the P tags, again, of the sender and receiver, the E tags of the addressed event, and that includes the Bolt 11 invoice as well as the pre-image. So here the actual pre-image gets published as well, and you can calculate that indeed that is a correct pre-image for that given invoice, and that gets signed by the receiver's public key. So if you want to display these SAT receipts events, there are four things that you have to validate. First is that the receipt's signature is the Noster pub key advertised in the LNURL response. So basically the receiver's pub key has to be mentioned. Then the Bolt 11 invoice must match the amount tag in the embedded SAP request, since the invoice does encode the amount. And the invoice's description hash should commit to the ZAP request. So that's the initial event sent by the sender. And of course, the pre-image hash has to be the invoice's payment hash. Not the pre-image hash, but I guess it's called the pre-image hash. It's not the hash, but it's the message that gets hashed. And one important note is that these are spoofable. So if sender and receiver collude, then they can create a SAP receipt for 42 million Bitcoin. And there's no way that you could disprove in this method that this is not a valid event, other than, of course, the outlandishly large amount of Bitcoin that doesn't even exist. There are also some variants for this. You can have a private ZAP where you can encrypt the ZAP request in the content. So the recipient can decrypt and see who the sender of that payment is, but he cannot prove to the outside observers on who the sender is. So here people know that someone got paid, but they don't know who the sender of that money is. On that outer layer, there's just an anon tag instead of the pub key of the sender. And there's also the idea of an anonymous ZAP, and this is where the sender generates an ephemeral key pair for the ZAP request. And so even the receiver does not know who the payment is coming from, since it's just a ephemeral Noster key. Of course, that makes it very easy for the receiver to fake that, because anyone can create a ephemeral random key, and the receiver will sign the malicious receipt. So these anonymous ZAPs are not as verifiable, since one party can create them alone. And there's also a convention for doing a ZAP goal. A goal is a kind 9,041 event that declares a target amount. And any zap that goes to this specific event will increase the targeted amount. So this is how you can do a fundraising, for example, to collect a certain amount of money. And once that amount gets reached, certain actions can trigger. And this is implemented in Amethyst specifically for live streams. And so streamers can make a Zap Razor or a Zap Goal where they say over the next 10 minutes, we want to raise 100,000 sats. And if that happens, then something gets done. And these apps are just accumulated by everyone who references this specific event. And finally, you can also do Zap Splits. So in any kind, you can add multiple pub keys as the receiver certain event. And this way, if anyone wants to send money to an event, instead of sending that to just one receiver's pub key, he will split the amount and send it to four or five, whatever, pub keys. And I guess the way to implement this is a single click, and the user says he wants to send 100,000 sats, and there are five authors mentioned in the Zap Split, so everyone should get 20,000 sats. Of course, this can get quite tedious with manual invoice copy-pasting, since there are then actually five invoices that have to be copied and settled in the Lightning wallet. But it works very smooth if you have Nostr Wallet Connect integrated or an integrated wallet in the app itself, so that it's still one click for the user and he can keep scrolling and all the payments are just handled in the background magically. Of course, most Nostr clients nowadays implement Zaps, at least on displaying them, but also most clients have somehow access to a wallet where they can initiate the sending of these Zap receipts or requests. And if you want to be able to receive Zaps, BTC Pay Server is a good self-hosted option for this. They have a plugin, a Nostr plugin that makes that easy. Or you can use a third-party provider, like, for example, Albi or npub.cash, which is a eCash-based Lightning address that can encrypt eCash tokens to whatever pub key is in the user field of the LN URL and just send via Nostr DMs that eCash token to encrypt it to that pub key. So receiving is still a bit tricky since you do need an always online server, not just to receive the Lightning payment, but also to sign and publish the SAP receipt. So much for Zaps. It's of course a very cool feature, and I think one of the many reasons why Nostr is so cool, because permissionless sending and receiving of magic internet money for shitposts is just a cool use case. I don't hear you, Danny, if you're talking.
No, I'm not saying anything. but yeah, this was interesting. It lasted longer than I thought. We've been in like 2.5 hours, something like that.
Yeah, that's the downside of Nostr developers. They just ship too much.
I know, right?
We have to talk about it all. Well, maybe we have to migrate Nostr Compass to just be a daily newsletter and podcast, and then it will be shorter episodes. But okay, so thank you very much for all the developers who have built some awesome stuff this week. Thank you very much to all the co-hosts who have joined me this week to walk you through this edition of the Nostr Compass newsletter. And as always, if we have forgotten to mention your project, then it is not out of malice, but out of ignorance, because there's simply too many projects to track. So tell us, open an issue to GitHub or write us a Nostr DM and tell us about your cool new Nostr project that we should definitely talk about. And then all the shippers get invited to the podcast recording as well. Thank you very much and see you next week. Bye-bye.